Hello, you're listening to the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. We're your hosts, Helen McLean and Jan McIntosh Brown. Here, we aim to look at all aspects of brain injury, from the research to the rehabilitation, and always through the lens of speech and language therapy. Hi everyone, welcome to the next episode of the Brainy Speech Therapist podcast. I'm Helen McLean.
And I'm Jan McIntosh Brown.
We are delighted to be back again, having another chat through just Jan and I. This time we're going to speak about all the different types of assessments that we've kind of come across in our careers. Some that we use quite a lot, some that we maybe dip into every now and then. As always, we would love to hear what your thoughts are on assessments and what are your go-tos. And if there's maybe ones that we talk about that you're not as familiar with, you know, if you need more information, then obviously we're always happy for people to get in touch. On that note, I've meant to say in a previous episode that about our social media accounts, I will hold my hands up. I'm the one that kind of takes the lead on those.
Thank you, Helen.
And I'm sporadic. It's posting, and maybe a little bit better on our Twitter accounts, maybe retweeting things or sharing ideas of things I've seen, but not very good at all on Instagram. I just feel like that's a difference in the platform, so I feel Twitter's maybe a little bit better for kind of sharing the kind of clinical ideas and research and things. So thank you to the people out there following us on those platforms. If people have got ideas about how I can maybe do better on Instagram, let me know. So anyway, without further ado, let's chat about assessments.
Yeah, and I thought I would start by talking about the process that I go through in my workplace. I am a bit of a detail-y person, and I like routines, and I like things done in the same way. Of course, people don't always fit that, but when we can, I try to do things in a fairly like a protocol. So I thought I would talk through that a little bit today. As I mentioned, assessments, we will come back and go into them in more detail. So it's just really, first of all, I'm just going to talk about my protocol. So I work in an inpatient rehab centre. So we can have people coming into the centre for rehab a long-term post-injury. So it could be 10, 15 years post-injury. Or we might have people coming in after 2 or 3 months post their injury. So we can get quite a big variety of people's levels following their injury. I guess my first session I always do, and I'm sure most of us do, just do a bit of a case history, a chat, and just finding out a little bit about the person, what they might want to get out of their rehab. And I keep going on about Sheila McDonald's course that I did many years ago, but Sheila McDonald used a visual of a house to sort of organise the discussion, and I kind of use that too. I kind of just grab a piece of scrap paper and say to the person, just while we're chatting, I'm just going to draw this house because I think that I would imagine that's your goal, is to get back to your house, back to your own life. And so I'm going to use this house to represent that as we're talking. And then it you just sort of map the information onto different parts of the house. There's no real set way of, you know, there's no semantic link to what should be the, what information should be in what part of the house, except maybe we usually have a garden path. So I think we put goals there because that's the pathway, that's the goals. So we do that in the first session. And I also, with the person's permission, record an initial video so that I get their permission to save it so that we can reflect at some point in the rehab journey to see if there had been any changes or any progress. And I think the video helps me to sort of reflect on the person's skills. It is kind of, you know, as soon as you put a video or a microphone in front of somebody, all of a sudden it's like, oh, but it can, often people are not able to inhibit their impulses to chatter along. So it can be at least some form of record of the person's communication in the first session. So then in the second session, I like to do what the start of our screening process. And for that, I use the Putney Auditory Comprehension Screening Tool, which is, if anybody doesn't know what it is, it's 60 verbally presented yes-no questions. And I use that, I say to people that I'm completing the tool with, is that I'm using it for two things, obviously, to look at how much they're understanding about what they're hearing, and also checking on their attention, because it's quite boring, it's quite repetitive, and so that's my rationale for using it. I also explain to people that some of the questions do seem a bit silly, but they are not trick questions. So yeah, that's what I kind of use. And I thought about using that, and I've been using it for nearly 8-9 years, because I guess I always have this thought that maybe in the future, I, you know, after having done it with hundreds of people, that I might be able to crunch the data somehow and see if there's anything interesting that comes out of everybody having done this assessment. When I say everybody, I mean everybody that's able, because not everybody is able. And so then I also do a verbal expression screen. So I use a picture sequence called the flower pot. Again, yes, I'm sorry, it's from Sheila McDonald's training course many years ago. She suggested that as quite a good tool for getting a discourse sample. So it's anybody that doesn't know it, just let me know and I can get you a copy. I don't know if it's in print anywhere. I think I have a very old article that talks about it, so I can possibly share that if people would like it. And really, you're just looking at getting a language sample that's used. You can look at word finding, you can look at elaboration, you can look at the grammar structure, the linking of ideas, the temporal markers, all of those sorts of really interesting things that we just love as speech and language therapists. And then from doing that, I will then go to the Brisbane evidence-based language test, which is a free language test that you can download from, I don't know the website, but we can put that into the show notes. And that has four levels. So based on how the person performed on the Putney and the flower pot, I will then choose the level that I feel the person would respond to. So, and then from the results of the Brisbane, I will probably go to the MCLA, or I will stop depending on how the person's responding. So that's kind of my protocol for assessment.
Nice. And I think there's definitely differences in terms of the actual assessments that we both use, but there's certainly crossover in terms of what we're looking for and all of that. You know, we're looking, particularly for our cognitive communication patients, we're looking at things like topic initiation, discourse planning, topic maintenance, turn-taking, all of these sorts of things. And so I think we were chatting before we were recording, and I was saying to Jan, you know, it's great that you've got the protocol. I can't say that I follow a protocol, but hearing you talk through yours, I'm thinking, oh, maybe that's something I need to consider a bit more. The other thing that you mentioned that I thought, oh, hang on, yeah, that sounds familiar, was you talking about the house. And this is maybe a similar concept. I think this, the version I've got, is also a Sheila McDonald idea. Yeah, this idea of a house. And I kind of use that to kind of have a conversation with a person around, who are the people that are important to you? Who are the people you're talking to most? Because I think we can then think, okay, well, what type of language are you using, or how familiar are you with people? the things that are important to you, what are the hobbies or interests that you have. And these are often things I kind of say to the person, you know, they're kind of immediate things around you. So maybe the people are, you know, your partner, your children, your parents, maybe. The things might be the things that you've placed a lot of value on, you know, if you've got, you know, your TV or your car, or if you've got interests or hobbies like, you know, walking the dog or playing video games or gardening or all of these things. Things that you're kind of doing maybe on a regular basis, because then you can start to get a picture of what that person's communication needs are going to be. And then you can think about what are they doing maybe beyond this house that we have. So the example that I have that I show people just so that they can kind of get to grips with it is, you know, maybe they're visiting their parents on a weekly basis, or they have a regular night out to the cinema on a monthly basis, or going out for dinner or things like that. And it's just interesting because it helps you build a picture of what that person is like and what's important to them, and really becomes quite nicely kind of values based, doesn't mm-hmm. it?
Might I suggest you put that, is that possible to put that in the show notes, that visual? I don't know.
We can certainly, yeah. So the visual that we're looking at the moment is one that I've just kind of made up myself from one that I think mm-hmm. Sheila had, but we will see if we can track down an actual like authorised version. If not, I'm sure we can put my cobbled together version up there. And then, yeah, so then I kind of show a person a more of a blank version of that and kind of go, so where does this fit in for you? But I think that maybe crosses over nicely with the kind of more formal assessments that you're talking about, because then you can see, okay, well, you know, for some people, if they maybe don't do well on a certain aspect of something that we're assessing, now, and I maybe, you know, speak out of turn here, but maybe that doesn't always matter for that individual. You know, if a person is quite happy, you know, they have maybe a couple of people that they're really close to, and they're maybe not out there extrovert wanting to be the life and soul of the party, if maybe their topic initiation isn't that great, maybe for them that's okay, you know. And it's, so that's where building an idea about who this person is pre-injury can be really helpful, to kind of form what is the point of all these assessments, you know. And then we could get into goal setting, which is not what we're talking about today, but that is why we're doing all these assessments, isn't it? It's to figure out what's not going well and what do we need to do about it.
Yeah, I think my goal for assessment is, I mean, I'm in working in rehab, so mm-hmm. it is about, is there potential for, you know, relearning skills, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. but also it's really important for me to be able to share with the team how to communicate with the person. So, you know, what's how to present written information, mm-hmm. what length of sentence the person can understand. So, you know, that, I mean, there is the expectation that we do a comprehensive assessment, but also, like you say, Helen, in the back of my mind, it's why, what am I doing, what am I trying to find out mm-hmm. for this person, you know?
I think that's a really good point, that it's, first and foremost, it's about that person in front of you and what's going on for them and what are their challenges that you then identify and support them with. But it doesn't end there. It is if there's other people that are working with them, or, you know, informing families, informing care staff, how best to communicate with that person. Yeah.
Okay, so shall I know that the Brisbane is something that not everybody is maybe using yet, but it is a free resource. So I'm like, if it's free, I want it. And it is quite a quick assessment if you're just picking the one part to do. So shall I talk a little bit about it?
Because yeah.
It is one of our standard tools that I'm now using, probably have been using maybe 12 months. I can't okay. remember exactly.
Yeah, so, no, I think that would be really good. I hold my hands up. I yeah. think I've heard of it, but I've never used it. So yeah, it'd be really, really interested to hear about.
So there's a couple of articles that are available on the website where you can download this, that you can read how the tool was developed and why. why, and why they call it the evidence-based language test. I'm not going to go through that because it's definitely not in my head. There are four levels. So there is the foundation level, the foundation with objects, the standard test, and then the higher level test. I tend to use the higher level test, and it is a bit like an aphasia test. So it goes through the four modalities, so auditory comprehension, verbal expression, reading and writing. And so I'm going to talk about, did I say that I was going to talk about the higher level?
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Thank you. See, memory. So in the higher level, you always start at quite a fundamental level. And so I do explain that to people. As you know, I say, look, we're going to start sort of hopefully an level that you'll find quite manageable, and then it will very quickly gets more challenging because there aren't many questions. It kind of moves quite rapidly. So for auditory comprehension in the Brisbane, you'll start at sort of following two-stage commands, and then by the end there's only six commands to follow, and it's up to three-stage with, you know, an after or before, I can't remember which one. And then it moves to sort of, you know, more higher level language task. I can't remember exactly. It's things like your definitions and your synonyms, and they also do some of that in verbal expression. So, you know, explaining similarities and differences, and your idioms, and yeah, so it sort of goes, I feel like it starts off at aphasia and ends up in COG-COM,
mm-hmm.
which is why I quite like it, because it goes across, at least the high level one, which I'm more familiar with. The reading and writing stays fairly at a functional level, so just being able to read short passages. There is a paragraph to be read in the reading section, and then it's quite interesting because after reading the passage, the person's asked to recall the information, which is a little bit different from most of our other assessments where it's presented verbally and asked to recall. This time the person's asked to read it and then recall, and there's no questions following that reading passage. So I've actually added some reading questions following the reading, so I can compare how the person manages just recalling compared to how the person manages answering questions. And then the writing's just, there's a Mount Wilga task that's like this, where they're given words and asked to form sentences, and that's as hard as it gets in the Brisbane. So that's the Brisbane. It's very quick. I you know, with a, I've done it in one sort of half hour setting with a person, so it is very quick.
As you're talking about it, it does sound like there's some similarities to the Mount Wilga, but it sounds like the Brisbane is maybe one that we should go to a little bit more, because I think the Mount Wilga was never fully standardised. I think you could maybe argue that it does the sections that fully assess the areas it's claiming to assess, you know, whereas presumably there in the title it's evidence based, so
yeah.
You know, that suggests that there's a little bit more robustness to it, so that's interesting that there's something else out there now. And it does sound, if you've been using it for about a year or so,
yeah,
it is relatively new.
I guess I still use it as a screen because there aren't many
mm-hmm.
you know, examples or questions in each area. I still use it like a screening test, so if it highlights something to me, then I might go and do a bit more. But at the end of the day, like you said, Helen, you know, it's not about assessing the person to death. It's about, okay, this suggests that you're having difficulty. What am I seeing functionally? Is that mm-hmm. is that actually playing out, you know? We will often find that people fail the verbal fluency or the visual confrontation naming, yet functionally they've got the words and the vocab that they need, but
yeah,
they can still fail those discrete tasks.
And isn't that another interesting thing? Because I think the thing that my speech therapy colleague and I, friend of the podcast, Lynn Grayson, who's been on before, the thing that she and I often kind of bemoan is sometimes the lack of good assessments that are out there. And I think that was why I was keen that we'd had this topic today. Because one of the challenges that crops up again and again and again with the brain injury population is perhaps a person not having great insight into what is difficult for them. And so actually, if you have got something that you can then kind of go, here's something kind of black and white that we can kind of go, okay, actually, here's where we would have expected you to be. And obviously, you know, you're always taking into account what is that individual like, and what would their pre-injury abilities have been. But there's definitely something to be said for having a hardwired assessment that you can kind of go, okay, can we have a look at this? Is that actually where you think that you would have done before?
I totally agree. I worked a few years ago with a man who was often quite offended and then quite aggressive by the interactions of other people. And so I used the tacit with him, and it was from just looking at his results on the emotion recognition that I was able to sort of support him agree that maybe he is picking up things wrong and being okay with that, and just understanding that sometimes he is misinterpreting. So mm-hmm. I agree with you, Helen, sometimes having the actual evidence that you can support somebody with helps.
I suppose that just kind of something that's just come into my head. I know the thing that Lynn and I quite often would use to try and help with insight, or to at least kind of start to get across the idea, actually maybe what that person believes about their communication doesn't quite match what other people believe, is something called the Latrobe communication questionnaires. I don't know if that's something that you've used.
I did use it quite a lot. I have to confess I haven't used it as much recently, but I have thought about it just in the last couple of weeks, thinking, come on, let's get back into this. Mm. I think, you know, I'm not quite sure why I haven't been using it as much. But,
I think that just happens sometimes with assessments. You know, it comes back to that matching what is right for that person.
It's certainly in my assessment pack.
I know that we certainly enjoy it. I suppose it's maybe that difference because we're out in the community and we are maybe seeing people in their own environments versus yourself in the inpatient setting, and we're only seeing snapshots of a person. So the Latrobe questionnaire, for people not familiar with it, is 30 items on a questionnaire. You give a copy to the person with the brain injury, you give a copy to someone, to a significant other, you know, a family member or something. And while what I mean about us only getting a snapshot is, you know, we're there an hour a week or something like that, and they're not as you would have in your setting, surrounded by other staff members who can maybe give feedback. Mm-hmm. So I think that's maybe why I like and benefit from the Latrobe, because I'm getting that feedback in another way from the family member, for example. And sometimes it's back to that being black and white, that you can then kind of go, okay, this is what you've told me as the person with brain injury. How does that marry up with what your wife or your daughter or whoever is saying? This is going to show us up as maybe not the best speech therapist in the world, because I think there is a way of properly analysing the results. I can't say that I do that.
I can email you the spreadsheet.
I've got the spreadsheet. Right. I can't say that I use it very often. I kind of use it as a way of sparking a discussion. I think, you know, kind of like, okay, so here's where you guys were agreeing on, this is a change, or this is or here's where there's a bit of a mismatch. Do you think, Mr.
So-and-so, facilitate the discussion. Yeah.
I think what's maybe coming through is that you're good at following a protocol and having your kind of plan, and maybe a bit more loosey-goosey about it all.
And there's pros and cons for both.
Yeah. But I would say that's something that's changed over my time working, actually, because I do love an assessment, you know, and I love getting some information that is black and white. But it's funny how that's maybe slightly shifted a little bit over the years. But yeah, so what we've... Yeah,
shall we talk about the quick aphasia battery again? Because that's a free resource. And I don't think there's too much to say because it sort of says it in its own title. It's mm-hmm. a quick aphasia screening tool, and it covers all the key areas as well. The thing I like about this tool is that it's free, but there's also three of them. So there's three versions. So if you were wanting to use something to sort of baseline somebody and then retest them after an intervention, then the quick aphasia battery is something that you could use. So I will try and find the link to that again on the internet, and we can put it into the show notes. Not much else to say about the quick aphasia battery.
No, I think it's definitely something that's worth having a look at. I think it's relatively new as well.
Mm-hmm.
I've not used it an awful lot, but I've certainly really liked it, as exactly like you say, Jan, it's that quick screen.
Yeah, I mean, you can do a more comprehensive assessment if you want, like the CAT, the comprehensive aphasia battery, and then, as I said, use the quick aphasia battery as maybe your baselining tool if you want to measure your progress and intervention. So, yeah, you could use both. And, I mean, I guess there's probably not much we need to say about the CAT and other aphasia batteries like that, like the PALPA and mm-hmm. the Boston.
Because I think we're probably assuming the majority of our listeners, if you're speech therapists, you will be familiar with these assessments, and if you're not a speech therapist,
you don't need to know about them,
you know. So I think what we were thinking with this conversation today was talking less about the assessments that maybe the majority of adult acquired speech and language therapists are used to, but talking more about maybe some of the more specialist assessments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say in relation to the CAT is that we know that it's got a disability impact questionnaire, and Kate Swinburne has now got a potentially an updated version, isn't it? It's the aphasia impact questionnaire. So that's the AIQ21. Again, available online. We can try and find the link to it. And she has different versions that's more culturally sensitive. So there are different versions, different visuals that you can use for people from different cultures. So again, that's just another little mm-hmm. piece of interesting information. So shall we talk, I mean, as you were saying, Helen, a lot of speech and language therapists who are working with people with acquired brain injuries, adults with acquired brain injuries, know about the next two assessments, the MCLA and the Mount Wilger. But I think what's probably, we could potentially talk about with these two things is what we like about them.
Mm-hmm.
And also of note is to mention that these two assessments are out of print, and I do have documentation. Well, I'm not so sure about the Mount Wilger, but I do have a sort of protocol that states that the MCLA can be photocopied because it is out of print. So if anybody is wondering about that, then we can certainly send you a copy of that too. So what
we're
do you...
We're just sharing so much.
I today. Know! We're just the podcast that keeps on giving. Right, so what do you like? Do you like anything about the MCLA? Let's start there.
Yeah, so I would say, like, the MCLA is one of my kind of go-to assessments. Not necessarily to do all of it, because there is a lot to it. But certainly I like the kind of discourse kind of aspects of it, you know, where you're getting a good feel of how easy is it, you know, because there's an aspect of it that many people will be aware of, you know, just think of a topic and tell me about it. And just even getting that impression of how easy can someone initiate a topic, think of something to talk about that interests them, and how much support, how much cueing do they need to get into that. You know, I just think that's really helpful. You mentioned earlier about kind of the flower pot picture, you know, I think the MCLA has got the kind of a slightly equivalent, not exactly the same, but you know, it's got a picture description aspect to
it.
A
bit like the cookie theft, but it's not the cookie theft.
Yes, exactly. And the cookie theft we've not even mentioned, but we could, well, that's, yeah.
That is in the Brisbane. You don't get a copy of the cookie theft in the Brisbane, but the Brisbane uses the cookie theft for the picture description.
Right.
So you need to get a copy. But you can download them, like, in Google Form and get the images.
Yeah, the cookie theft is easy to get a hold of. And for people who, hopefully everyone's got the newer up-to-date cookie theft picture.
Is there a newer up-to-date
Well,
one?
It came out maybe within the last few years.
Really?
In that it's in colour. And
no, I haven't seen that, so there you go.
Yeah, it's still, you know, there's maybe some questionable aspects
behaviours?
To yeah. You know, maybe not entirely gender balanced, and but that's a topic for a whole other podcast, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so MTLA, I like that you can discriminate between different areas. You know, you're looking at auditory comprehension, you're looking at different aspects of verbal expression. You know, you've got your confrontational naming, you've got your discourse, you've sometimes thinking, where's the value? And I think lots of tests have this, though, of, you know, can you tell me step by step how to do something? Functionally, you know, for most people, they don't really need to tell us how to make a cup of tea, do you know? But
I think it's good to see how a person organises. So, for example, today, I just off the top of my head, I just said to a man, you know, tell me how to make scrambled eggs. And he only gave me two sentences, and he went from scrambled eggs to an omelette by the end of it, you know. So he had lost the task in his
which I think is interesting, isn't it, to kind of have that within a, you've given them something defined to explain. So yeah, there's definitely a value in that. I think you can maybe get some of the same information from just saying, you know, from just having a conversation, you know, or tell me about something, or with the picture description, you know, keeping to topic. And you know, because thinking of the picture in the MCLA where there's the person outside the window washing the windows, all that quite often leads to quite a lot of tangential information coming from, oh, I need to clean my windows, and then you know, so I think you could argue this with lots of assessments, that, you know, you can get lots of the same information in multiple ways. But yeah, what do you think of the MCLA, Jan?
Yep, so after the Brisbane, I will quite often go to the MCLA because for the bits that I feel like the Brisbane hasn't really picked up on. So I like the paragraph comprehension, because that's sort of gradually testing how much the person can hold and retain. And also, because it's an American test, and I often preface the second story with, this is American, does that bother you? You know, it's also check, you know, sort of looks at the person's ability to manage potentially unfamiliar information as well, because, you know, it's got a lot of American references. And then, and then, you know, looking at how they respond to the questions, and then comparing that to the next task of the story recall. So then I can look at, okay, in terms of the person being able to encode and then retrieve information, were they able to do that independently through the story recall, or did they perform better when you were asking them questions directly afterwards? So I quite like comparing those two tasks. I then like the quotations, some of the answers you get. And I think if you ask me, I'm not sure, like the first time I heard them, how I would respond to some of the quotations. But again, I like doing it verbally and then providing the written support, because then I can see, and it usually does help. And, you know, maybe it's a bit obvious, but I still like to say, well, I've done it, and I do have the evidence to say that written support helps this person. So, because it doesn't always help.
It is interesting. Yeah, I think with the quotations, I think the first time even I looked at the MCLA, there was one or two, I was like, oh, actually, I've never come across that.
Yeah.
Do you know?
Yeah.
I think most of us are familiar with, you know, the idea of being a good sport. And, you know,
when
the many
conscience
hands.
Conscience tries to speak, the line is busy.
Yes. I'd never come across that before. But, you know, it's, I suppose that's the difference, isn't it? Because you hear it and we can kind of go, okay, right, I've not heard it before, but I can disentangle what that is meaning. But it is always an interesting one to give a person. I quite often preface it with a kind of, don't worry if you've not heard this one before, you know, but just do the best. And you saying about the Americanisms, it reminds me, like, within the reading aspects, because I really like the MCLA reading components, true. Because there's not an awful lot of really good reading assessments out there. And I like the graded way that the reading aspects are, going from reading kind of front page simple. Of the newspaper up to really quite complex opinion pieces. But yeah, I think there's one of them that mentioned something about an entree, and I always have to say, do you know, this is American, do you know what an entree is? And very few people do.
I didn't even know that, because in Australia it's entree.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Well, I'm saying that word there, and as I'm saying it, like, I don't even know if the last time I said that word out loud, have I been saying it wrong this whole time?
And then, of course, the MCLA does have norms, which are probably outdated, but at least, you know, it gives you a sort of ballpark, you know, so I like that. So then the Mount Wilga. Now, I did use the Mount Wilga a lot when I first started, but I have to confess it's been many years since I picked it up. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about the Mount Wilga?
So I'm similar to you in that I used it a lot when I first started working, but have really moved away from it because I think there's a lot to be said that it can't, it's not necessarily always testing what it claims to test.
It's quite tricky, isn't it?
Yeah. So I couldn't tell you the last time I used the Mount Wilga. And that's why I think it's interesting about you mentioning the Brisbane. It sounds like there's a lot of crossover there, but it does sound like the Brisbane is maybe a little bit more robust and a bit more valid. So that would be where I would maybe be looking to go forward with.
I think if a person was having difficulty with the figurative language or the inferential language in the Brisbane, I would probably have just gone to the MCLA previously, but if the person's quite a functional communicator and has you know, prognosis of wanting to go home and maybe looking at vocational opportunities, I would probably go to the Montreal now that we have the Montreal.
Exactly.
And I know you
the
like
words,
the Montreal. So.
I was going to say, yeah. Because so this is the Montreal Evaluation of Communication, which again, relatively new in the last few years, I think. Yeah, it's. I've used it a few times recently. It's not for every patient.
No, it isn't. Yeah.
It is for people who are maybe a bit more higher level. As you say, people looking to return into work or some sort of, you know, vocational time occupation, but it does have some nice sections on interpretation of metaphors. It's got sections around comprehension of prosody, so it's it presents audio files and the person's got to, and it's repeating the same statements but in different ways. So was that being said as a question, was it a direction, or is it neutral? I like the aspects where it's again a similar idea, it's the same statements being said, but the person has to judge how the speaker was feeling. And I think that's really helpful in the brain injury population, because that those are the sorts of things that can crop up a lot, you know, and time and time again, and these are the things that in the long run actually have a massive impact on how someone copes in a communication situation.
The task I really liked, and maybe it sort of again shows where my preferences lie, but I really like the narrative task, you know, where it builds a story so that it gives the person a short paragraph and then they have to recall what they from that paragraph, and then the second paragraph, and they have to recall, so it's building a story, and then at the end they've heard what, five paragraphs,
so,
and then they have to see how much of that they can recall. So it's kind of like how a conversation goes, isn't it?
Yeah, and I also really like at the end that you ask the person a question about the story that they have to make a judgment of.
So inference,
does the person mean to do that? You know, so it's not just about that person taking in information and parsing it back. It's actually about making a judgment and taking inferences from it, which is exactly like you say, that's conversations, you know,
things that aren't said.
So I am a big fan of the Montreal, like we say, not for everyone, but
it's a good tool to have in your toolkit.
Yeah, definitely, because I think there's sometimes, like, for a while I felt like there was almost a bit of a gap in assessments you could have, the kind of more your basic, you know, initial assessments to get an idea of where's a person at. But if you really wanted to try and get into the nuts and bolts of something, or the person who was a bit higher level, it was harder to sometimes figure out, okay, where are you at? So that's where things like the Montreal comes in, which is really nice. And the other one that I like is the Favours.
Or the Favres.
Or the Favres. As I call it. Yes. Now, the reason we're both commenting on this is because I think all of us used to call it the Favres. The reason we're commenting on this is because this assessment by Sheila MacDonald, again, you know, we're obviously big fans of Sheila. I think we all used to call it the Favres, and then I think Lynn maybe heard Sheila speak about it, and she referred to it as the Favours. So we're taking...
It's so much nicer, isn't it?
Yes.
Let's do the Favours.
Yes. So this is the Functional Assessment of Verbal Reasoning and Executive Strategies. And it's, along with Montreal, probably my kind of go-to for higher level assessment. It's looking at things like complex comprehension, discourse, throws in a bit of executive function. It's that really nice bridge, I think, between kind of language and cognition.
Yeah, I think it's asking the person to use multi-modes of communication, whereas sometimes what we do is, now I want you to listen and understand, now I want you to write, whereas with the favors, we have to, the person has to use both. They're having to, you know, read and write, and then at the end they have to listen and use their verbal expression and reasoning, and so
because the favors, if you've not seen it, it consists of four tasks, and each task follows a similar pattern where you're basically giving the person something they have to do on their own.
And it's timed.
And it's timed.
But not a time limit.
No. And then you're asking them questions after the fact of, how did you arrive at that decision that you made, essentially.
Sort of ignoring irrelevant details and picking out the main points. And
then you throw a caveat at them around, you know, well, what if this cropped up, and what would you do now?
Problem solving.
Yeah. So, it's a nice assessment. Again, not for everyone, but if you have got your higher level people, the people maybe looking to return to work.
Yeah. A task two is really hard. I don't think I would be able to do that.
Yeah. So task two, if you've not seen it, is you're given lots of information about a person planning their day at work.
Lots of to-dos on the to-do list.
And time limits for when things have got to be done by. And
yeah, they've got to put it into the schedule and make it fit. Yeah,
yes. And so, why have they put it in there? Which is quite often the bit that I think people miss.
Yes.
The Favours is, I think, a really particularly good assessment.
Indeed.
And
then, like you were talking about with some of the emotion recognition, and I talked about it with one of my people, is the TACIT, the Assessment of Social Inferencing Tests.
Yeah.
So
that one is, like you say, Jan, it's about emotions, and it's something that is looking at a person's ability to categorise emotions, to understand feelings.
Task one. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is a UK version, Helen and I just found out, so we're hoping, I don't know if there'll be Scottish accents, but UK accents, because at the moment the person is asked to watch Australian videos, so it's like watching Neighbours, and I always make that joke with people and they're usually more accepting of it.
Of course Neighbours has just been is just finished, so we'll have to come up with a new until we can get our hands on the UK version.
And so the person watches videos of actors having sometimes a conversation with another person, but sometimes maybe just on the phone or just describing something, and they're using a certain emotion, but they don't use any words that give away that emotion. They kind of have very neutral language, but they're using their intonation, facial expression, body language, all of that to express the emotions. So the person's having to pick up on those non-linguistic sort of elements to detect the emotion.
Yeah, and it is, the TACIT is always an interesting one to do, because usually you will get some comments around the quality of the content of the videos in terms of, you know, the kind of, like, as Jan says, you know, the neighbours style acting. But sometimes that's quite nice because it just breaks down a wee bit of bit of barrier, because people are aware they're being assessed and it's nerve-wracking for lots of people.
And also there is now a short version, because we had the long version, but now we've got the short version. Then there's two more tasks, and again it's watching videos. And from memory, Helen, and feel free to correct me, the second task is watching these videos, and then instead of just identifying emotions from, they get a cheat sheet, don't they, of 6 or 7 emotions to choose from. In the second and the third task, after watching the videos, they're asked questions to, you know, how was this person feeling? Did they really mean to say that? What were they trying to get the other person to do? Those sorts of questions. And task number two is comparing when a person might have been sincere versus when a person might have been sarcastic. And task number three is comparing sincerity, sarcasm and lying.
Well remembered, Jan.
I only just did it last week, so I should remember.
The reason why I'm struggling to remember is because the version that we have requires you to play the videos via like a CD-ROM, and my laptop doesn't have a drive anymore, so we're unable to use the TASA at the moment until we buy a newer version, which come with everything on USB, I think.
It's
now
USB, yeah.
Yeah, so we're just a bit lagging behind in our team with that. But I suppose that's where coming back to something like the Montreal, because it includes some things around emotional inferencing, you've still got other ways that you can start to get an idea, is this something that needs to be addressed for that person. The tacit is entirely about those social inferences, isn't it? So I realised the other wee thing that I should have maybe mentioned quite early on was the cognitive communication checklist for acquired brain injury. Just because actually that's another one that is free and is really easy, quick to use, so kind of up there in the category of things like the quick aphasia battery, but is obviously good for your looking at your cognitive communication. It is really, it's one page of A4.
Again, I think we've included it previously, haven't we?
I think we have mentioned it, yeah.
We can certainly go into it again.
It is, of course, the fabulous Sheila McDonald's.
We're not getting any commission.
No.
but as we say, it is a free resource. So.
Yeah, and I think when I was kind of just double-checking on a couple of things to do with it prior to the recording, it's just worth mentioning that, yes, it's absolutely something to be used by speech and language therapists if you're maybe needing a way of having a screen, particularly because I think I've seen people suggesting it be used within an acute inpatient setting to kind of start having a look at that. But it also suggests it can be used by non-speech and language therapists to maybe help identify, is this a person that needs to be referred to speech and language therapy? So it's worth mentioning from that point of view as well. And as I say, it's like 40 items on a checklist. You just run through, you know, are these the things that you're asking the person? Have you noticed changes about this? I'm sure we have mentioned it before, put links in before, but no harm putting it out there again.
Absolutely. So I think we've covered a lot of the key ones. Of course, we have, you know, our motor speech assessments. Now, Helen, you talk about lemon and lime.
Yes, not anything to do with gin and tonic or anything like that. We've briefly mentioned aphasia assessments. We've largely focused on more of the kind of cognitive communication assessments. But when Jan and I were talking about just all these different types of assessments that are out there, and we were talking about apraxia of speech, and that was when I'd mentioned something called the Lemon and Lime Library. She says, unable to even say
articulate
it, needing my own assessment. So, it's interesting because actually, I don't know if lots of people have come across it. So it's not an assessment in the way that many of the others we've spoken about are. It is really, and it's been a long time since I've used it, but it's basically, it's a ring-bound book, and it has a set of pictures, or use it as a set of words, and really you're just asking the person to have a go at naming picture. It's an articulatory, so the idea behind it is that with this set of pictures, set of words, you will hit every articulatory point.
Because often, if you're looking online for articulation, it's often very pediatric, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it can. I think the Lemon Lane Library can theoretically be used with in a pediatric population, but certainly I've always used it with adults. So it means that you can then kind of see a pattern of where are people having difficulty.
Mm-hmm.
And it then also gives you some worksheets to work through as well. And I think there's a CD that comes with that, that you can print off worksheets. And
if you have a CD drive.
Exactly, yes. So it's quite good. It's, I think, maybe one of the it's certainly the only kind of resource that I'm aware of with that's kind of formally out there to do with apraxia of speech. We could have a whole debate about whether it is apraxia versus exactly, the phonological assembly difficulty. I know that there's research suggesting which it is, and whether
big
it
words.
Actually, I know.
Big words, Helen, for this time at night.
Yeah. I've not had my dinner yet, and I'm managing to remember such things. But yeah, if you're not familiar with it, it's definitely worth.
I think it's again another handy tool for in the tool bag. Mm-hmm. We do have an apraxia of speech assessment and a dysarthria assessment. They hardly ever get dusted off. The dysarthria assessment we have depends so much on reading. So, and then again, you're not getting, real speech because the person's reading. But again, how do you control for all the things that go on when a person's speaking spontaneously? So...
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I'm aware that we're coming to kind of the close of our conversation, but just I suppose to say about the dysarthria, like you say, you're not necessarily very often doing the formal assessment. I'm sure just both of us will have an oromotor assessment that we know that this is what we're doing, so we can make we can document, where is there potential kind of, weakness, what sounds are difficult, etc. But I think I'm aware of is maybe some of my colleagues at work, for example, in progressive neurological conditions. In, for example, MND, that maybe people will use a more formal dysarthria assessment because then you can get a baseline for what is that person like at that point in time. That's just from picking up from colleagues that maybe that's where they've used more formal, like the Frenchy or the Robertson dysarthria assessment. But it's maybe not something that us in our area of brain injury that, I couldn't really tell you the last time I did a formally documented dysarthria. It's an oromotor examination.
And I'd like to just mention finally before we finish that there's a few of us speech and language therapists and maybe other professionals who are supporting the review of a pragmatic profiling tool from Australia, and I mean I don't see it as only for people with high communication support needs. I can see that potentially because you're looking at the pragmatic use, the language use according to pragmatic function, so requesting, denying, answering questions, social use of language, I do feel that I probably would use it more with people that just we are not able to use any of the tools that we've talked about today. So it's really an interview question that you're using with people who are familiar with the person with the brain injury and who can help you see, how that person communicates different functions with their language mm-hmm. or behaviour mm-hmm. at times.
And I think it's fair to say, obviously, we've spoken about the assessments that we use. I'm sure there are others out there that
there's a few that I can think of but I've never used. So.
Yeah, so it's not to say that this conversation is... it's not comprehensive. These are just the ones that we use, that we have access to. there's maybe ones you've heard of that we've spoken about, and hopefully that maybe encourages you to go and investigate more, try and get a copy for your own service, your own department. And if there's others that you think, do you know, Helen and Jan really need to hear about this assessment and needs,
please come and tell us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, get in touch via the Twitter and the Instagram feeds, and let us know what you make of all of these assessments.
And as usual, if there's anything that Helen and I have said that you think, that's not quite right, get in touch. We'd love to talk with you, you know.
Exactly, so yes.
As always, we're learning as well.
Exactly. We are not the experts. It just so happens we're the ones that put our voices out there in a podcast.
So thank you for listening.
Yes, no, thank you. And we will be back soon with another episode. We've got a few exciting guests lined up, haven't we?
We do indeed.
Keep you all interested. Hope everyone's well out there, and we'll be back again soon. Cheerio.
Bye for now.
The opinions and views expressed in this podcast are of the individual and should not be considered professional advice. If you have a brain injury, suspect you have a brain injury, or think someone you know has a brain injury, please seek dedicated professional advice.